The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I'd like to talk today about the third bodhisattva vow. So the third bodhisattva vow is, however limitless the Dharma is, I vow to understand it completely. Okay. Last week we had our renewal of vows and precept ceremony. And often at that time when we recite our vows and our precepts, there'll be something in the vows or our precepts that stands out for me as I get a little bit different take on it or think, oh boy, I really need to work on that one. And, you know, this last time it was this third bodhisattva vow. So the bodhisattva vows, as we know, are a Mahayana practice. I think I read somewhere that they started in the 6th century. And actually, I had heard this before, but in this time, in preparing this talk, the connection became clear to me. So the bodhisattva vows are actually in parallel with the Four Noble Truths. If you look at some of the older translations of those vows, you see how they parallel the Four Noble Truths. One slight exception. The third bodhisattva vow actually is in parallel with the Fourth Noble Truth. So this, however limitless the Dharma is, I vow to understand it completely, is about the Eightfold Path and how we are able to move away from suffering. Okay. As we know, the Bodhisattva vows are a way to determine for ourselves to do something about our lives to help all beings in the way that we live and practice. And of course, when we say all beings, we include ourselves. And I'll just go through the bodhisattva vows so that you can have a general context for this. So the first bodhisattva vow, and this is Reverend Master Jiyu's expression of these. The first bodhisattva vow is, however immeasurable beings are, I vow to save them. Second bodhisattva vow, however inexhaustible the passions are, I vow to transform them. Third bodhisattva vow, however limitless the Dharma is, I vow to understand it completely. And the fourth bodhisattva vow, however infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to attain it. Vows are an important part of our practice. Of course, you know, when we said the lecture verse, the last line of the lecture verse is that I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. It's just a way to focus and determine in our practice is that we're going to really work at something. The interesting thing about the bodhisattva vows is, in a sense, the way that they are stated, there is a bit of a contradiction. Okay, years ago, I gave a talk on the bodhisattva vows, and immediately, you know, talking about them, where people are asking questions, someone says, that's impossible. They're impossible to keep. Because in a way they are, you know. Immeasurable, inexhaustible, limitless, infinite. Well, those are definitely not a matter of once and done. Or being perfect at keeping them. Who's perfect at keeping the bodhisattva vows? I mean, all our vows You know, we're human beings. We rise and we fall. But the thing is, we can get up. And we can just deal with what we have in front of us right now. So you can't, if something's immeasurable, you can't leap to the end. You just have to practice it where you are right now. The beauty of Buddhism, though, is that we keep at it, changing, improving, refining our effort. And this is why River Master Jiyu translated the last lines of the scripture of great wisdom. O Buddha, going, going, going on beyond, and always going on beyond, always becoming Buddha. Hail, hail, hail. Okay. Because it's a work in progress. And because something is a work in progress, it's not an excuse for falling short in our practice. When we fall short, we got to just stand up straight and look at it and work to improve it. So vowing, kind of the essence of it, is determining to do better, to widen and deepen our understanding and to put that understanding into practice in our everyday life. Vowing is a solemn promise to ourselves. We vow because we want to do something about ourselves and thus help the world. We're not trying to rearrange the world first, but we're getting ourselves together. And in that process, we help the world and we can better help the world. If we want to do something about ourselves, we don't aim for the lowest bar. Remember Master Yu used to say that's famous with us human beings. We aim very low and go lower than that. We actually should aim above our heads towards the ideal. And maybe more than we think we can do. Because it's amazing what we can do. Yes, it's important to be realistic and to balance the ideal and the actual. But you know, we can often do more than our mind limits us to. And we're not limited by that. That's just the mind. In the glossary of Zen is Eternal Life, Reverend Master Jiyu defines Dharma, and this is Dharma with a capital D, as law, truth, the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors. Dharma is the medicine for all suffering, as it teaches the way to transcend greed, hate, and delusion. And I looked up Dharma on the internet and, you know, other people's take, Wikipedia, other takes on the Dharma, and there were some interesting things. And Dharma is a truth one can know for oneself, something that we can experience for ourselves. So it's not something way beyond us, although it's limitless. It's also something within it. And that's another take on limitlessness. And the Dharma is directly visible. This is really important because it's the way the Buddha taught. He was not highfalutin. Or Master Jiyu was not highfalutin. The way that they taught was the Dharma is directly visible. We just have to look. Just got to get the dust out of our eyes and have a good look. I think that we are very fortunate, you know, in this day and age, we've got the Pali Canon, the words of the Buddha, as well as the teachings of great masters and teachers who came after the Buddha to this present day. When I first, there's just all kinds of books, okay? When I first started to practice and study Buddhism, so this is, you know, near 50 years ago, you'd go into a bookstore and you were lucky if you could find even a shelf of Buddhist books. There was not bookshelves full, okay? And often those books were kind of hidden. You'd have to go into the occult section of a bookstore to find Buddhism because, you know, it was new here, okay? So there's a lot of books and talks and discussions about Buddhism nowadays. Quite accessible, some quite good. Okay, I think quite helpful. And I think, you know, lucky for us, there are more and more translations of Buddhist teachings. That's a wonderful thing. And of course, with the internet, you can find a ton of information about Buddhism. I mean, you can just go on the internet and go from one thing to the other and the hours pass, you know, and I don't think that's wasted time necessarily. It can be useful time. And just to say this again, I think it's great that we have access to all of this Dharma. And sometimes we get a little lost in all this material. Okay? In the monastic life here, the way that we practice it at the Abbey, when you start out as a novice, we limit the amount of books that a novice has permission to read. You know, you have the novice bookshelf. Okay? Again, when I first started, that bookshelf was not even a shelf. So you've got more books nowadays. And this is not because we're trying to be censors, okay? But rather because for someone that is new to the monastic practice, there's a lot going on every day that you really need to pay attention to. And, you know, possibly a lot of reading at this stage of the game can be distracting. Also, sometimes in reading, this is a very human tendency, we get caught up in the ideal when we read things. You know, we read things about how things were, and we hearken for those days, and nowadays it's so different. Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, sometimes you want to come down from the ideal. I hear people sometimes say, can we have talks or discussions about the Dharma? On one hand, this sounds like a great idea to me, you know. But for some reason also, it perplexes me a bit. This is just me. I'm not anti-intellectual, but I'm not, you know, a super reader, a super intellect. I'm all for studying the Dharma. But what I try not to do with my life and my practice is divide the Dharma up, where this is Dharma, but this is not Dharma. And I'm sure that's not what's meant by other people talking about the Dharma. It's just me. Right. So there's a book by Vajan Chah's teachings entitled Being Dharma. And it's interesting that whoever put this together divided the chapters into these different headings, which I think is very insightful. So first there's hearing Dharma. Then there's understanding Dharma. Then there's practicing Dharma. Then there's seeing Dharma. Then being Dharma. And finally, teaching Dharma. So to me, these chapter headings show the breadth of the Dharma and the way in which we experience it. I'd like to read just a little bit from Being Dharma, a collection of Ajahn Chah's teachings. And this is actually in his chapter entitled Being Dharma. So he says, our desire, our wish to know things quickly is not Dharma. It is only our desire. If we act according to desire, there is never an end. You know the story of Ananda, the Buddha's attendant. And as we all know, Ananda was the one who could repeat from memory the Buddha's teachings. A wonderful thing. And it's part of the reason we have these teachings today. Okay? But he could repeat these by memory. His faith was as strong as anyone's. There was to be a Sangha Yana, That's the Sangha Council after the passing of the Buddha. And only arhants would be allowed to attend. Ananda was determined to attain the stage of arhant and began strenuous practice so he could join them. But his mind would not do what he wanted it to. He was in this coarse state, and over again, he was only meeting with frustration. So he thought, tomorrow is the Sangha Council. All my Dharma friends, the arhants, will be attending. But I am still an ordinary person. What should I do? He decided to meditate from dusk to daybreak. He went at it, but he was only getting fatigued. Coming to the end of his tether, he decided to take a brief rest. At dawn, he set down a pillow and made ready to rest. Having made the determination to rest, his mind had already started letting go, putting down his business. Then, lying down, even before his head hit the pillow, his mind let go completely, and he saw the Dharma. He was enlightened to the arhant stage. And, of course, he's admitted to the council. They realize what has happened. Seeking to let go, we can never do it. We could try for years, and it wouldn't happen. But in that moment when Ananda had decided to stop, to take a rest and put down his burden of wanting attainment, just resting with mindfulness established, the mind let go and he was able to see and awaken. He didn't have to do anything special. Before, he wanted something to happen and it didn't work. There was no occasion to take a rest, no occasion to awaken to the Dharma. So that was nice for us and nice for Ananda. Okay. In our Zen tradition, Dharma is often expressed by walls. It's particularly in reading Dogen, but some of the old Chan masters. So by walls, by trees, by bricks, by grasses. Nature constantly offers us the Dharma. And of course, we all know this. You know, that's why part of the reason we like to go out into nature, because it helps the mind rest in peace, which is essential to seeing and being the Dharma. So phenomena give voice to the Dharma. You know, it's just not the Buddha's teachings, but phenomena. And what the Buddha says, that even if there is not a Buddha that appears in this world that can be seen, the Dharma is there. And he also said, when he was dead, his monks would have the Dharma. So it's just something that remains. And then, for all of us, there is the voice of stillness in our practice. Okay? That manifests the depth of the Dharma. It's not necessarily words, you know, great teachings from the Pali Canon. It's just the stillness. The Buddha's teaching and Buddhist teachings obviously offer us the Dharma. But also, once we are willing to take a look, Dharma shine in our everyday life. Just take a look where we are, who we are, when we are. Dharma shines through in our everyday existence. Even those that we don't get along with or find hard to put up with are our teachers. This is a different way to look at these things, different perspective. So Dharma practice, at the heart of it, is really about engaging ourselves fully in our everyday life. You all probably know this story from the Tenzo Kyogen, but I think it's just a wonderful example of this. So Zen Master Dogen was a young monk. He's in China, and he's traveling about China looking for the truth, you know, the correct practice. So he's down at the docks one day, and he sees this older monk on a ship, And, you know, I think he said that in those days, older monk was 60, because, of course, people didn't live as long. So he starts talking to this monk, because he liked to engage people, okay? And it turns out that this monk had walked maybe 10 miles from his temple to purchase some mushrooms for a special temple meal the day after. He was the Tenzo, the chief cook of a monastery. So Dogen's pretty impressed by this. And he wants to talk with him. I'm sure about the Dharma. Okay? That's what Dogen wanted to talk about, the Dharma. As we all know, in those days, Dogen was in his head in terms of the Dharma a lot. He's very intelligent, but he hadn't kind of brought the practice down to a heart level. So the temple cook, Dogen's wanting to talk to him and take his time, and the temple cook says, well, actually, I got to purchase some mushrooms and go. I got a long walk to get back to the temple, and I need to be back there before the meal tomorrow. And he also said, and this is very naive, is I don't have permission to stay out overnight. That's very naive and nice. So Dogen responds, surely in a temple as big as yours, someone else is capable of cooking the food. I cannot believe that the absence of one chief cook could cause trouble. So the chief cook, says, although I am old, I, as a chief cook, am in charge of cooking. Since this is the training of my old age, how is it possible for me to give such duties to others? So Dogen doesn't quite get it. He comes back with, surely it would be better for you, and he really puts his foot in it this time, surely it would be better for you to do zazen or study koans. Whatever is the use of cooking, of working so hard merely at the duties of a chief cook? So the old monk starts laughing very heartily when he hears this. And he says, my good foreigner, you have no idea of Buddhist training, nor of its character. And then fortunately, he takes off, the older monk, and Dogen continues on in his journey. But this has actually made Dogen stop and have a look a bit. Okay, he had a number of these exchanges with chief cooks of temples that I think actually turned around his training, got him out of his head. And so the next year he runs into this old monk again. And this monk is no longer the chief cook at the temple. He's getting old. And so, the chief monk, or excuse me, the chief cook gives Dogen some more teaching, and that just helps him along a bit more. Okay. So, great master Dogen was like us now, when you look at this kind of self-revealing story. And look how his understanding of the Dharma deepened. But he had to get out of his head. Okay? He was just stuck there. So I think this is a very hopeful story, and there's hope for us all. So I'll reiterate again, there's nothing wrong with formal study of the Dharma. Formal Dharma study, and by this I mean reading and studying the Dharma in books, can widen our perspective and give us insight into the Buddha's teachings. It's also very encouraging and inspiring to our practice. The thing is, what we don't want to miss is that the Dharma is all around us. Okay? We have to open our eyes in our daily lives and see that everything is teaching us. Do not have to go to a book to study the Dharma. It's fine to go to a book, but the Dharma is right in front of us. And you know, our life and the Dharma, if we look with the correct eyes, is not the same old, same old. Our life is actually dynamic, full of experience, and changing all the time. There's nothing to be bored by. The limitless Dharma is here now to learn from. And we need to engage our whole mind and whole body where we live out our lives, as opposed to going somewhere else or going into a book. Sometimes I think that we are so sophisticated and complicated that we go right by the obvious. You know, when the Buddha taught the Dharma, he did it in many ways. His was a teaching of generosity, compassion, and wisdom. He met all kinds of people. And they were at different points in their lives, and he was willing to offer teaching right at that point in their lives. So the Dharma meets us where we are, and if we will let it help us, carry us, it takes us to a deeper understanding. And we just keep going, learning, changing, developing, and seeing more and more clearly with our Dharma eye. I think one of the keys to this whole process is humility. Okay? Humility is very important in a growing understanding of the Dharma. Remember Master Jiyu, towards the end of her life, would often say, "What do I know? You know, this is a great Zen master, you know, who's been practicing many, many years," and she's saying, "What do I know?" And she would also quote Zen Master Dogen, something that he said at the end of his life. He said that, "All I know is that on a face there are two eyes and a nose." You know, what do I know? So, Reverend Master Jiyu was highly steeped in Buddhist learning. She's a very intelligent woman. And way back to her teenage years, she was studying Buddhism. You know, so that kind of a head start on many, many of us. She knew a lot, but she never dined out on that intelligence. I mean, that was the thing when I first met her in the early 70s at my college. I was just amazed by this person who was obviously so intelligent, knew so much, and yet was willing to meet people where they were and to you know, try over and over again to explain something to them. Yeah, I think she really knew that there was always more to learn in terms of the practice and the Dharma. It's just always something more. No matter how many times you do something, if you do it with a still heart, it's amazing how it's a new experience. And I think, as at the end of the Scripture of Great Wisdom, we just go on, always becoming Buddha. And River Master would add, "Don't forget the hail." Thank you.